Chapter 17. Traffic was heavy on Peace Street, where the Republic of Iraq had its embassy in the historic 19th-century Boardman House. A stream of limousines and luxury cars passed in front of the three-story Romanesque-style building near DuPont Circle, stopping from time to time to disgorge men in tuxedos, women in gowns, attired for a black-tie affair. The doorman waved a taxi in to take the place of a departing diplomatic limo and opened the passenger door. Karina McCarty emerged, her lithe figure sheathed in an ankle-length velvet dress whose black-brown color matched shoulder-length sable hair that was pinned back in a French twist. The gown's scooped neckline displayed a décolletage that hovered between proper and sexy. An embroidered white shawl covered her bare shoulders and set off her creamy dark skin. She thanked the doorman with a smile that sent his middle-aged temperature soaring to unhealthy levels and followed the other guests through the arched front entrance. A young male embassy employee glanced at her gilt-edged invitation and checked her name off a list.
"Thank you for coming to our reception, Ms. McCarty. The Embassy of Iraq welcomes you as our guest."
"Thank you," Karina said. "I'm pleased to be here."
The vestibule echoed with the conversational hubbub created by dozens of chatting guests. Karina glanced around with her bold blue eyes, unsure whether to linger or peel off into a side room. As the other guests became aware of her presence, they turned her way, causing a lull in the level of voices. Karina was not a tall person, yet she had a compelling physical presence that seemed to demand attention. The women in the room sensed her female magnetism and instinctively gripped the arms of their escorts, relaxing only after a tall, middle-aged man broke off from the crowd and made his way toward the newly arrived guest. He clicked his heels and bowed gallantly.
"Karina McCarty, the Angel of the Antiquities, if I'm not mistaken."
An anonymous headline writer had given Karina the lofty title in an article published by Smithsonian Magazine. She smiled graciously and took control of the conversation.
"I've never liked that description, Mr.—"
"Pardon me, Ms. McCarty. My name is Anthony Saxon, and I offer my profound apologies if I have offended you."
He spoke in the vaguely British accent that was once cultivated in exclusive American prep schools.
"Not at all, Mr. Saxon."
She extended her hand.
"How did you recognize me?"
"Your picture has been in a number of journals. It is a great pleasure to make your acquaintance in person."
He took her hand and kissed it. With his distinguished looks and baroque manner of speaking and well-fitting tux, Saxon seemed like a turn-of-the-century ambassador. He was more than 6 feet tall and rail-thin. His thick ginger and gray hair was combed straight back from a devilish widow's peak that came to a point above thick eyebrows. A pencil-thin mustache of the style worn by 1940s movie stars and gigolos decorated his upper lip. His face glowed with its desert tan.
"Are you with the Washington Diplomatic Corps, Mr. Saxon?"
"Far from it, I'm afraid. I am an adventurer by choice, a writer and filmmaker by need. Perhaps you've read my last book, Quest for the Queen," he said with a hopeful lilt in his voice.
"I'm afraid not," Karina said.
Not wanting to hurt Saxon's feelings, she added quickly, "I'm away a lot."
Spoken with gentle honesty.
Saxon clicked his heels again.
"It matters not whether you have heard my name, for I have heard of yours, especially in connection with the retrieval of antiquities stolen from the Baghdad Museum."
"You're very kind, Mr. Saxon."
She glanced around.
"I don't suppose you would know where I could find Victor Balthazar."
Saxon's eyebrows dipped.
"Balthazar is about to make his presentation in the main reception area. It would be my pleasure to show you the way."
Karina's lips parted in an amused smile.
"You're very much the Victorian gentleman," she said, taking his proffered arm. "I fancy myself as more of an Elizabethan.
swords and sonnets. But I appreciate the compliment. He guided her through the milling crowd into a large room decorated with maroon and gilt drapes. At one end, a raised dais was flanked by lights, video cameras, and microphones. An enlarged photo of the Iraqi National Museum hung on the wall behind the stage. Rows of plush chairs had been set up in front of the stage. Saxon headed to a love seat against a side wall. He explained in a conspiratorial whisper that the seat offered a good view of the guests entering the room and allowed for an easy escape if the speakers became too long-winded. Karina recognized several low-level State Department staffers, politicians, and journalists. A number of men and women who represented a cross-section of Middle Eastern antiquities scholarship were familiar to her as well. She became particularly excited when Professor Nasser came into the room. She stood and waved. The professor strode across the room, a wide grin on his face.
"Miss Makati, how wonderful to see you."
"I was hoping you'd be here, Professor." She turned to Saxon. "Professor, this is Anthony Saxon. Mr. Saxon, Professor Yasim Nasir." Saxon stood to his full height, towering over the Iraqi. "I'm honored to be in your presence, Dr. Nasir. I'm well acquainted with your work at the museum." Nasir beamed with pleasure.
"Please excuse us," Karina said to Saxon. "Dr. Nasir and I have much to talk about. It's been quite a while since we last saw each other."
"By all means," Saxon said. In a single motion, he snatched two champagne flutes off a passing tray and handed one to Karina. "Please let me know if I can be of any further assistance." Nasir watched Saxon weave his way through the crowd. "Not many people outside of Iraq know I exist," he said, obviously impressed. "How long have you known Mr. Saxon?"
"About 5 minutes. He ambushed me at the door."
"More important, how long has it been since you and I last met?"
3 years at least."
"How could I forget? It was in Baghdad at the museum. A terrible time."
"I'm sorry I haven't kept in touch with you as often as I should have."
"We've cleaned the place up, and thanks to people like you, the recovering effort continues. Money has been coming in, but our expenses are phenomenal. And with the continuing instability in our country, it will be a long time before busloads of tourists pull up at our front door."
"All the more reason why this reception must be so encouraging."
"Oh, yes," he said, brightening. "I was thrilled when you called and said you had recovered a major cache of artifacts. The idea for the tour is sheer genius. I never imagined that I would be here with so many of my respected colleagues. There is one of them now. You remember Dr. Shalawa?" The heavy-set woman taking the podium was a leading expert on Assyrian archaeology. Dr. Shalawa was dressed in the traditional Muslim dress down to her ankles. A scarf covered her hair. She cleared her throat to get attention, and when the audience had settled down, she introduced herself.
"I would like to thank the embassy for hosting this reception and our guests for their financial and moral support. Our first speaker exemplifies the spirit of generosity that will be instrumental in making our museum, again, one of the world's great cultural institutions. I am honored to give you Victor Baltazar, president of the Baghdad Museum Foundation."
As Dr. Shalawa led the applause, a man rose from the front row and climbed onto the dais to shake her hand. Karina had no idea what Baltazar looked like. He had a talent for keeping his pictures out of public circulation. She hadn't known what to expect, but it wasn't the powerfully built man in the custom-tailored tuxedo who took his place behind the podium. The massive head reminded her of a mastiff's. As she watched, Baltazar underwent a transformation. The fierce grin became a warm smile, and the pale eyes seemed to reach out to every person in the room.
When the applause finally died, he said in a deep, melodious voice, "It is I who am honored for being invited to speak before this august gathering. You were all part of the international effort to recover the antiquities stolen from the Iraqi National Museum in Baghdad." He acknowledged the second round of applause and went on. "My foundation was only a single link in the chain. Thanks to you, many artifacts continue to be recovered. The museum is re-establishing its conservation labs, training its staff, and establishing a database. Additional funding will come from the tour, sponsored by the Balthazar Foundation. I regret that I must leave the reception before I get a chance to thank you all individually, but I look forward to working with all of you in this noble cause." He blew the audience a kiss, stepped down off the stage, and made his way to the door. Karina hurried from the room and caught her quarry in the lobby.
"Excuse me, Mr. Balthazar. I know you're in a rush, but I wondered whether I could have a minute of your time."
Balthazar's lips widened in an engaging smile. "I would be impolite, and foolish as well, to refuse a simple request from such a lovely woman, Miss..."
"That's very kind of you. My name is Karina McCarty."
A thoughtful expression came to Balthazar's face.
"Miss McCarty? What an extraordinary surprise. From what I have heard about your bulldog persistence, I had envisioned you as a short, stout woman of middle age, with a mustache, perhaps."
He drew his forefinger across his upper lip.
"Sorry to disappoint you," Karina said.
"No disappointment, except for the fact that I must be on my way. How can I help you?"
"I simply wanted to add my thanks to you and your foundation for aiding my efforts."
"You're welcome. I regret now that I had not met you before and that we were able to communicate only with intermediaries. My business and charitable interests are very demanding."
"I understand completely."
"Then I am relieved. You are apparently quite the detective. Were you trained by the police?"
"I was a journalist originally. I reported on some important Italian art thefts that wound up in European and American museums. I became angrier the more I learned how the academic institutions and museums have become part of the illegal trade. Before long, I was trying to find stolen objects instead of writing about them."
"I understand your work is not without its dangers. I heard through Benoit about the hijacking and attempted theft of an artifact. Absolutely outrageous. It's a wonder you weren't hurt."
She nodded. "I would not be here talking to you if not for Kurt Austin."
"I'm not familiar with the name."
"Mr. Austin is with the National Underwater and Marine Agency. He prefers to stay out of the limelight, but he is responsible for saving my life, the ship, and the long-lost Iraqi artifacts. One of the hijackers shot him. He was only wounded, thank goodness."
"Austin sounds like a remarkable gentleman," Balthazar said. "How did he come to be on board the vessel?"
"Pure accident. He was on another ship that happened to be nearby when he heard an SOS.
"Remarkable. I would like to meet him sometime, so I can thank him."
"I would be glad to arrange it."
"I am amazed that you were able to recover so many of the Iraqi antiquities. How did you do it?" Karina thought about the countless informants she had cultivated, the bribes she had given freely, and the reluctant government officials she had wheedled without mercy until they gave in to her demands, simply to be rid of her.
"It's a long story," she said with a shrug. "Much of my success is simply an accident of birth. I have roots in Europe and Africa, which eased my ability to make contacts on both continents."
"African, you say?"
Your father was Italian, I take it. She nodded. My grandfather, too. He was with Mussolini's army when it invaded Ethiopia, which was where he met my grandmother. My mother never knew his name, only that her father was Italian. When she moved to Italy, where I was born, she gave her maiden name, Meccada, an Italian twist.
Meccada? That's a lovely name. Thank you. I understand it's not uncommon in Ethiopia.
Balthazar paused in thought for a moment before speaking again.
Tell me, Miss Meccada, what are your immediate plans?
I'm going to be busy organizing the tour. The artifacts are at the Smithsonian under guard. I'll be providing provenance data and background information that can be used with the exhibits. I've lined up meetings with people who have offered their help. Tomorrow, I'm going to Virginia to see John Benson, a National Geographic photographer who was present at the excavation of a statue known as the Navigator. Perhaps you can drop by and see the statue and the other pieces in the collection.
That sounds like a fine idea. I'm a bit of a novice about archaeology, I'll admit, but I own a few pieces. All legal, I might add. I'd be happy to show them to you over lunch or dinner.
I'd like that, Mr. Balthazar.
Splendid. Call the Foundation when you have some free time. They will have my schedule. They shook hands and Balthazar stopped to say his good nights to the ambassador and several other embassy officials. Karina turned to go back into the reception room and encountered Saxon. He had a bemused smile on his face.
I saw you chatting with Mr. Balthazar, he said.
Mr. Balthazar is the main reason I came to the reception. He's quite charming.
Do you know the source of the money he has been handing out?
Only that he owns mining companies.
That's right, as far as it goes.
Balthazar is the head of a mineral cartel that includes the biggest gold mining conglomerate in the world. He's quite controversial. His companies have been accused of destroying the environment and messing up the poor locals in half a dozen countries. What many people don't know is that he owns one of the biggest private security companies in the world. Mercenaries for hire. Karina had come across the unfavorable reports on Balthazar when she researched his background, but she had been so eager for the Foundation's help that she downplayed their significance.
What I do know is that he's been extremely generous when it comes to the Iraqi Museum.
I see. Blood money doesn't matter when it comes to the greater good and all that.
I don't need to be lectured on ethics, Karina said, her eyes blazing.
Saxon felt the heat of her words.
No, you don't. Again, you have my apologies. I actually wanted to talk to you about the recovered antiquities. In particular, a statue called the Navigator.
Karina wondered if Saxon had overheard her conversation with Balthazar, but she realized he had been out of earshot.
You know about the statue?
He nodded.
I know that it's a bronze, nearly life-sized, that was excavated decades ago in Syria. It portrays a mariner and is thought to be Phoenician, but there are doubts, which is why the statue was consigned to the basement of the Baghdad Museum. It languished there for years until thieves stole the statue during the American invasion in 2003. Its whereabouts since then had been unknown until you found it recently with a group of other stolen antiquities.
That's astounding. How do you come to know so much about the statue?
I've been searching for the elusive fellow since I first heard about it. I almost had my hands on it in Cairo, but you were one step ahead of me. Congratulations, by the way.
Why are you so interested in this particular artifact?
He raised his palm.
Aha! If you had read my books, you would not have to ask that question.
I'll be sure to put your books on my reading list. Karina didn't hide her displeasure at Saxon's coyness.
It will be worth your time, he said with a grin.
She had had enough of Saxon's smug attitude.
If you'll excuse me.
You're excused. But heed my warning. Be careful in your dealings with Balthazar.
Karina ignored the comment and headed over to talk to Professor Nasser.
Saxon watched her go. There was a grin on his face, but there was no mistaking the worry in his eyes.
As Balthazar exited the Iraqi embassy, a black Mercedes limousine pulled up to the curb. The driver got out and shouldered aside the doorman to open the car door. The doorman was an ex-Marine who was not easily intimidated. Angered at the loss of a tip, he went to protest, but the powerfully built driver shot him a look of such malevolence that the words never left his mouth. A moment later, the limo took off with a squeal of tires.
Good evening, Mr. Balthazar, said the driver. The reception went well.
Yes, Adriano. So well that I almost forgot about the debacle off Newfoundland.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Balthazar. I have no excuse for my failure.
Perhaps I can provide you with one, Adriano. His name is Kurt Austin. He's with Numa. Austin is the gentleman who foiled the hijacking.
How did this Austin know of our plans?
He didn't. It was a regrettable coincidence that he happened to be in the neighborhood. Unfortunately for you, this Mr. Austin is quite intrepid. And lucky as well. Your shot only wounded him slightly. Adriana recalled the quick glimpse of Austin over the sights of his gun and later in the cockpit of the helicopter that had shadowed the mineral ship.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Austin.
I'll bet you would, Balthazar said with an evil chuckle. But we have more important matters to deal with. I've learned that there is a National Geographic photographer who has some pictures that should not see the light of day. I want you to acquire these photos.
Would you like me to dispose of the photographer?
Only if it becomes necessary, and make it look like an accident. I would prefer that the pictures merely be removed.
What about the woman?
Balthazar pondered Karina's fate. He was a man who was capable of extinguishing a human life when it suited him, but there was more to Karina than met the eye.
We'll keep her alive as long as she proves useful. I want a comprehensive investigation of her background.
Then, can I deal with Austin? We have something to settle between us.
Balthazar let out a heavy sigh. Cruelty didn't bother him in the least. His was the classic psychopathic personality, and, as such, he was devoid of empathy. People existed to be used and tossed aside. But Adriano's suggestion signified independent thought on the part of an employee when what he demanded was obedience. At the same time, he was not without sympathy with Adriano's need for revenge. He, too, had a score to settle with Austin.
I want to find out what he knows, Adriano. You can deal with him later. I promise. Adriano closed his eyes and worked the thick fingers of his hands.
Later, he said,
as if he were cherishing the very word.